Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this meeting of Rydale District Council's Planning Committee. We're not expecting a fire alarm tonight, so if it does sound, it is for real. Please leave the building by the rear doors or the door on my right and congregate in the top car park. Ladies and gents, toilets are in the corridor along with water. Please can you ensure your mobile phones are switched off or on silent. We do have a number of speakers this evening. Each speaker will have 3 minutes and I will give an audible warning when there are 30 seconds left. Do all members have a copy of the agenda papers? Lovely. We'll move on to the agenda. Agenda item one, apologies for absence. Have we received any apologies?
Apologies have been received from Councillor Cleary. Councillor Sanderson will substitute.
Thank you. Item two, declarations of interest. Does any member have any declarations? Councillor Paul Andrews.
The application about signposts, Chairman. I suppose it'll have to be prejudicial, won't it, this time?
Thank you. Councillor Maud.
Thanks, Chairman. Personal, non-prejudicial, I'm sure. But I have been known to travel on the North Yorkshire Motor Railway. Thank you.
Councillor Mrs Shields.
Item number 10, Chairman, the Northern one, personal, not prejudicial.
Thank you. I'll declare a personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary interest in item 6 as I've been lobbied. Councillor Joy Andrews.
The same, I've been lobbied on 6. And 11.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary. I've been lobbied on item 6.
Councillor Andrews.
I've also had a ride on the North York Moors Railway.
Lovely, thank you. Right, we'll move on to agenda item 3, which is the minutes of the meeting held on the 16th of January 2018. Do you agree that these are a correct record? I'll move those minutes. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Hope? I'll put those minutes to the vote. Thank you. Someone not voted? Thank you. That's 8-4 and 1 abstention. The minutes have been approved. Agenda item 4 is urgent business, and I have no urgent business. Agenda item 5 is schedule of items to be determined by the committee. So we'll move on to agenda item 6, which is the application northeast of Rock Cottage, Pickering.
Thank you. Microphone up. Thank you, Chairman. So reverberating. Push it a bit further away. Thank you, Chairman. This particular application was the subject of a committee site inspection on the 2nd of February, which rather unusually was a Friday, which was a week last Friday. And I think quite a number of the members who were here tonight were actually on the site inspection, so undoubtedly you've obviously had the benefit of looking at the site and also the surrounding area, which it's quite a considerable tour of the area of north, west, south and along Newgate to see the site in its context. I'll draw members' attention to the full report, which is on the late pages. The reason for the lateness of the full report was because at the time the agenda was actually published, we were still waiting for the final clearances of the lead local flood authority chairman, which was clearly quite a matter of significance given the location of the site next to Pickering Beck, above the main area of the town there. What I'd like to do is just quickly update members on further comments that we've received since the late pages were sent out. And the first of those is an interim report from a company called On-Site Archaeology Chairman, who yesterday excavated three trial trenches on the site, which were three 20-metre long trial trenches at key points on the site to investigate further some potential anomalies that had shown up on the geophysical investigation that the archaeologist had already done. The trenches have revealed nothing at all. There are no archaeological features present at all, and the only conclusion was that the anomalies that were showing on the geophysical results were actually in the topsoil, but there have been no features of any archaeological interest, Chairman. We still await the formal response from archaeology at County Hall. It's half term week, Chairman, nobody's there, but we are expecting that there will be no requirement arising from those investigations. We've received three further late comments, the first of which was relating to from a Mrs. Lum, who'd raised two points. One, that the report made no mention of the heritage footpath in the vicinity of the site. Well, I think, Chairman, the report makes several references to the public rights of way in the vicinity of the site, and we're at pains to look at all of the public rights of way in the vicinity of the site when we actually inspected the site a week last Friday. The second point, which has been raised as a concern, is essentially the comments received from the Town Council, which were appended to the to the January report, Chairman, where members will recall that the Town Council had made comments, but it wasn't clear what the conclusive comment was from the Town Council. And I think the final comment we'd received from the Town Council was there wasn't a formal vote. The mood of the council was to support the application, and I think that's caused some concern locally with that particular individual. The second and third comments we've received come from the same address, a Mr. Stevens and a Mrs. Stevens of 66 Littledale Pickering, both objecting to the siting of the development in the Lowland Meadow. They take the view that this development is has an adverse impact on the countryside and that it's out of character with the locality. The only other point that I really wish to pick out, and it may be raised tonight by speakers perhaps, is that one of the objectors who actually just raised as a third party objector was actually the Pickering and District Civic Society, who had raised early in the new year some serious concerns about flooding matters, were concerned about the potential industrialisation of this part of the valley, concerns about precedent, concerns that this development in itself might actually raise security issues rather than improve them. And as members will probably recall, there was the problem with vandalism on the railway a few months ago. Also raising issues of noise and light nuisance, Chairman, and also suggesting that there is a preferable alternative location locally, which again might come up in the course of the discussion. Those really are all the updates, Chairman, nothing else to add. What I would like to do, for the benefit of members here who haven't been to the site or probably are familiar with it but haven't been around the tour that we all did a week last Friday, is just quickly take you through some photographs of where we went on that day and just to point out things of interest. So this is the entrance point to the site from Newbridge. Okay, there's a bridge over the Pickering Beck in this location here, and the development does involve the replacement of this bridge and an improved access point. So that was one of the points that the report picks up on, is from an ecological point of view, needing to control how that work is carried out because of the presence of white-clawed crayfish in Pickering Beck, which aren't a protected species. In the foreground at this point, interesting, you can see the sort of relative flatness of the valley floor. Hills on this side. There are hills behind us from where the photograph was taken. And in the foreground, you see buildings that relate to the trout farm. I'm not sure if you can pick these up off, but here there are sort of metal poles with netting over them, which are over the trout stew ponds. No, obviously no trout in them at the moment, I would suggest, Chairman. Also in this location here, you can see the existing crossing, which is an unmanned crossing. So if you're going across there, you physically have to stop your car, open the gate, open the other gate, go across, and then hopefully close the gates behind you, which I think is not always happening, so there's a potential safety issue there. And that road then leads, as it's not a public right-of-way at that point, it's a private access track, which heads off left to, there's a couple of properties further off left up the hill, residential properties. And in this area here, you can see Rock Cottage. So that's referred to in the committee report. And Rock Cottage, as you can see, is slightly elevated above the adjacent site where the development is proposed to take place. Panning across, this is a view taken from within the car park area where we all met, and there's a better view of the crossing. So these are the former Trout Farm buildings, which aren't forming part of the development area as such. And this is the building I've referred to in the committee report as the larger, I think what probably was initially some time ago, built as an agricultural building, which runs east-west across the valley floor. There'll be some photographs and views in a few moments that I'll show you, which show how that links with other buildings to potentially impact on views both up and down the valley. And this is just panning around from that next shot. So in the far distance you can see other agricultural buildings of an age which actually run north-south along the valley. And the public right-of-way runs behind the back of those buildings and carries off either to Wells Walk or up to name of the hill now, Rooker's Hill, and down onto the beck. So the footpath branches out into three directions at that point. And just while I was standing there taking this photograph, a train conveniently came along to show this is where the track is at the moment. There's another line here, and the application site is behind there. Having crossed the railway line, then this is where at the moment there isn't an access into this field here, but the access would come in at this point here. And these little peg points you can see here show the alignment of the carriage stable, which runs along the eastern side of the track and would be in this area here. At the highest point of the building, the height of the shed would be roughly the height again of the carriage. So your high point would be about here. In the distance you can see the digger. In fact, that was the archaeologists doing their thing yesterday. So the two trenches, first two trenches were here, and then the far one is in the position of where the carriage repair facility building is. So that's where the repairs and the painting takes place in the second of the two buildings. So that's located further north on the site. This is a view looking back down the valley towards the town. As you can see, flat valley floor, valley sides, and if I panned across further, you then come across to Newbridge and the very steep slope that goes up towards Pickering Castle. This is a view taken from adjacent to the beck where the public footpath comes down to the beck. So the beck actually runs, the footpath runs right along the beck. And as you're viewing back up the valley, this is that large building next to the crossing point. And these are the two other buildings that were the agricultural buildings in the valley floor. So the public right of way follows along here, comes up there and behind the buildings. As you can see, although this is a view right up the valley, you can see that these buildings that are, I think in anybody's term, fairly low-grade buildings, are actually quite a feature in the landscape locally looking north. This is a view taken from where I just took that photograph looking back. I'm sorry it's very, very dark, but this shows what is effectively happening on the track at the moment, off the main line. There's a parallel line where carriages are stored, some of them in, you know, waiting for repair and maintenance, but it's quite a lot. There's quite a number of carriages at various points up and down the track, and you'll see more photographs of those in a moment. This is a view just nearer to that hedgerow, so the public footpath is returning to the corner of the field, and again a closer up view of the agricultural buildings here, and the agricultural building, which looks as though it's being used more as a builder's store at the moment, adjacent to the site boundary, but in my opinion these buildings largely screen what's being proposed on the planning application from this viewpoint. You probably just see the outline of the edge of the carriage stable at that point here. This is a view looking, well, you're at the corner of the public right-of-way where the public right-of-way becomes the private right-of-way back across the crossing. So these are the Trout Farm buildings I showed you on the first photograph. This is that large agricultural building which looks as though it's currently being used for storage. And panning across, this is the public right-of-way which heads up past Rock Cottage and towards Church Row and Bridge Row in the distance. So you can just see Bridge Row in the far distance there. This is the application site here, which is at a lower level. And this is further along the public right-of-way. The public right-of-way sort of goes through the curtilage of Rock Cottage. So the main dwelling is in this area here, and there are some outbuildings which you'll see on the photographs there. And you can see at this point that you're probably a good 2 metres plus above the level of the application site. And this is where the first two trenches were dug by the archaeologists. And this is down on site level. So again, you get a view for carriages being stored along the line going well past the application site towards the Newbridge crossing. So they're all the way down the line. Quite a lot of them are wooden teak carriages, and in essence they're pretty much irreplaceable. So, you know, that's the resource that the railway has, and is seeking to repair them and put them under cover. Panning round, I'll sort of show you this because this is the end of the curtilage of Rock Cottage, and you see that the levels drop down there just at this point, and in the distance you can see where the third trench was being dug, which is where the repair workshop facility would be in this area here. So it's further to the north of Rock Cottage, and in the distance you see some properties here, individual properties, and then the Church Row and Bridge Row in this area here. And that's just to give you a better view of Rock Cottage. So Rock Cottage is aspected east-west, so it's viewing across towards the carriage stable rather than the repair facility, which is further away. I thought this was a useful photograph because this is the public right-of-way, which is very well walked. Clearly, you know, quite a lot of dog walkers were sort of walking down that. And at this point here, just beyond Rock Cottage, you almost enter a tunnel of planting. And at that point there, although you're slightly elevated above the site, you can't really see through this, even at this time of the year, because of the density of the existing hedgerow. I think at times of the year when that's in leaf, then you've got a pretty much an effective screen all the way up past the boundary of the site. This is the view looking back the other way. I think members who were on the site visit, we stood at this corner, and if I'd taken the photograph there, unfortunately it was full sun, so it would have been a pointless photograph. You could just see a gap in the hedgerow there, but looking back along that same footpath, you get a feeling for how this footpath is sort of totally enclosed. And this is a view from that same vantage point looking backwards, and again another fairly low grade sort of agricultural building adjacent to the public right of way, which continues immediately past it and out towards the cottages further to the north. This is a newly planted hedgerow by the looks of things. It's my head height was about here, so you can see this is fairly newly planted. But this is just near the point at which you turn to walk across the front of Bridge Row cottages. And again, you can see more carriages parked at this end. So the carriages are actually parked a long way beyond the application site. And the reason for taking this photograph is that as you look back down the valley, there are hedgerows across which are other parcels of land which further screen the view. So this is a view as we walked along the little footpath in front of Bridge Cottage, which is a public right-of-way. I'm sorry it's a very poor photograph, but just in the distance you can see that building which goes across the valley again. So whichever way you look at it, if you look into the south, north and north-south, you see buildings across the valley floor. And obviously this is a view back down the line. So this is the working line, and this is the carriage where the carriage is currently parked up on that first long siding. And this is a view back across. So again, you can see the almost like paddocks and parcels of land in front of Bridge Cottage, which have got a variety of garden sheds or whatever. But then beyond it, you can see the covered over carriages, which have been there some time, awaiting repair. This is a view from where that public right-of-way comes out onto Newbridge. The reason I took this is that it shows you the beck, and although at this time of the year the planting is not in leaf, you've got planting both sides of the beck, you know, typical riverside trees and the like. And you can see beyond them at this time of the year, you can see the railway line and the parked up vehicles. This is a view down Newbridge itself. And obviously, looking down the line, all you get is a feeling of screening because it's obscured by trees adjacent to the roadway side of the beck and also on the opposite side of the beck. If you stand at various points along that at the moment, because there's nothing in leaf, then you can get glimpse views of the carriages that are awaiting repair. So some of these are covered up, some of them not. And that was the seating. I'm not sure what the seat, what you stand and look at in this seat, really, or sit and look at this seat. But again, you get a glimpse view at this point of a variety of carriages and other trucks. So that was it, Chairman. I hope that gives you a feel for the surrounding. For members who couldn't attend the site visit, a feel for how the site sits in its surroundings. As you can see from the recommendation, Chairman, we are recommending approval to the application. But it is still, if members are minded to approve the application, subject to final clearance from the archaeologist. Thank you.
We do have a number of speakers on this item, and the first one is the supporter, John. Chairman. Sorry, beg your pardon.
Sorry, I do apologise, Chairman. There was a very late update this afternoon, and it was from the council's economic development officer, which says, as economy leader RDC, I would like to add my strong support for the proposal. I would echo the views expressed by the York, North Yorkshire and East Riding LEP, who highlight the economic importance of the North York Moors Railway to Rydale in the LEP area. This attraction generates over £30 million worth of economic activity for the local area and directly and indirectly supports over 1,000 local jobs. This proposal is essential to sustain the railway and provide the required quality of services. The facilities will support up to 50 new jobs through expansion of the operation for visitors, attracting more visitors to Rydale and encouraging them to stay longer. Importantly, the value-added Pullman dining services will be increased, thereby boosting overnight stays, and will commence from Pickering. This will substantially increase the passenger flows through Pickering Station and will free up the area adjacent to the station for future development of a new visitor reception centre, further increasing quality of experience and economic activity there. In view of the significant economic benefits of this proposal and its importance to the future success of this key Rydale attraction, I would urge approval of this application. Sorry, Chairman.
As I was saying, we do have a number of speakers this evening, and the first one in support of the application is John Bailey. Yes, please, the button in the middle of the...
Good evening. I'm privileged to be the chairman of the NYMR Charitable Trust that runs what is the largest heritage attraction across the North York Moors. I'm pleased to speak in support of this application, which is about securing the future, not just for the NYMR, but for all those local businesses it helps sustain, for local employment and the developing reputation of Rydale and Pickering in particular as a tourist destination. Maintaining the 18.5 miles of our railway is hugely expensive. Its viability depends on attracting a lot of fare-paying passengers. Now, the carriages they travel in had a design life originally of 25 years. In the early days, they were readily available second-hand from British Rail with plenty of life left in them. Now, most are over 60 years old, and the supply has dried up. Later designs use a different braking system incompatible with most steam engines, and they're more susceptible to rust and rot. So we absolutely depend on keeping our existing carriage fleet operational. The damage done by exposure to the weather is more than cosmetic. It causes rot in the main steel structural components, requiring extensive replacement and welding. We've got pretty good at it, but we can still only turn out roughly one overhauled carriage a year. And once repaired, a carriage is good for another 20 to 25 years if left outside. The challenge, however, is that we have and need 42 of them. Simple maths tells us that to maintain services, we have to increase the working life between overhauls by protecting them from the worst of the weather. Unfortunately, we don't have a large piece of suitable land on which to do so. Other alternatives would be piecemeal and protect many fewer carriages. The public's fascination with heritage railways continues to grow, and we expect to benefit from the forthcoming 3 one-hour television programmes about the railway on Channel 5. We're excited by the potential for an even better Yorkshire attraction, but we need to give our skilled staff and our volunteers a fighting chance of providing the essential carriages we need. Then we can continue with confidence to delight our visitors, to facilitate several hundred local jobs, and to generate over £30 million a year for the local economy. Thank you.
Thank you. We now have an objector speaking, Mike Potter.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I'm speaking on behalf of Pickering Civic Society, and obviously you've just heard the economic case, but as you'll be well aware, the National Planning Policy Framework has 3 pillars of sustainable development, all of which carry equal weight. I repeat, equal weight. So the economic case, it seems to pass. The Civic Society agree there are huge economic benefits from the railway, but we prefer to look at the town as a whole rather than just that small area of the railway. So looking at the social impact, in our consideration, it fails, particularly the impacting the amenity of that area, which you've seen on the pictures, and the residents, although perhaps people are less concerned about that, but I go back to the equal weight. Environmental issues fails. Flood zone 3, remember climate change. When are we going to stop developing floodplains? It's going to be very expensive to develop this site in order to comply with the Environment Agency and the lead local flood authority requirements. All water is going to have to be pumped off the site, requiring pumps to work constantly when there's any water there. So in reality, the economic benefits are rather questionable after all. There are serious concern among members of the railway and carriage owners with threats to remove stock from the line simply because this design is flawed. There's a security and arson risk which negates the purpose. Essentially, it's an open barn with potentially all the railway's eggs in one insecure basket. We have looked with considerable effort at an alternative site at Newbridge Quarry, which passes all the planning policy framework sustainability criteria. Very worryingly, the officer's report seems to fail completely to mention this. I'll quote from sequential test, which you'll all be aware of. Only unavoidable development should be permitted in flood zone 3. Development should not be permitted if there are reasonably available sites appropriate for the proposed development in areas with a lower probability of flooding. Evidence to support the sequential test should be submitted to the planning file for the public record. Unfortunately, none of this seems to have applied. So there are hurdles to overcome, but certainly no brick walls. So this is a very worrying recommendation to approve a flawed design in a flawed location, and worse still, it disregards the safeguards in place to address the genuine concerns of floodplain development. Thank you.
Thank you. I now call on the applicant, Andrew Scott. Switch on in the middle. Thank you.
Good evening. This proposal stems from the Trust's desire that the railway can continue to operate successfully for the benefit of Pickering and the National Park. The Trust's corporate plan highlights five key challenges to this and focuses on dealing with them. One priority is to stop our irreplaceable carriages from rotting away. Already, we suffer from overcrowding at peak season because we don't have enough fit coaches. Undercliff is perpetually blighted, as you've seen in the photos, by gently rotting coaches parked up beside the line. Too much carriage repair work takes place in the open air up opposite Park Street. The problem is simple. We have no stable for coaches and only a tiny workshop for them. We know this is a large development, but it's the minimum we should do to make the NYMR more sustainable and indeed more tidier for passers-by. Being a railway, and a railway in which for the most part runs through a national park, site choices are few. We've looked at prospects from Whitby in the south, in the north to even Pickering Showground in the south. We've consulted with planning officers, the national park, the town council and others, and we've found only one suitable site. It's level, it's beside the line, it's close to Pickering, and it's available. Newbridge Quarry has been raised as an alternative. We looked here at the outset, but it proved unsuitable. As it's been raised anew, we've talked again to the Duchy and to Cemex, the tenant. But the problems remain. The available space isn't big enough, and it slopes too much for railway safety. It's a working quarry. Even if it were big enough, the busy quarry access road would need a dangerous level crossing over the new branch railway that would be required. Their workshops would have to be demolished and relocated. Perhaps surprisingly, many trees would need to be felled. The owners and tenants, whilst very helpful, have no intention of closing the quarry in the foreseeable future. We have tried to approach this project as a good neighbour, but inevitably some concerns have been raised. On appearance, we know that cheap agricultural buildings aren't right. So we've worked with a respected architect to get something that will be a positive addition to the landscape rather than an eyesore. On noise, all I would say is that we will be placing undercover here activities that we currently undertake outside opposite Park Street and where complaints have been few. On flooding, with yourselves, we're a member of the Slowing the Flow Partnership. We understand the issues. Pickering Station is one of the first places to flood. You've received a late paper and we've not had a chance to respond, but suffice to say that the planning application drawings are not detailed construction plans, and we expect to agree all final details germane to flood amelioration with the Environment Agency and the County Flood Officer. We would expect to have appropriate conditions. All water on the site does not need to be pumped away. Some might, and there is provision for a pumping station. Our design engineers have worked throughout with the Environment Agency to produce a solution with no net impact on Pickering's flood resilience, and we would expect EA approval of details to be a planning condition. To conclude, we're a community-based charity.
Can you please finish at the next sentence, because you're already quite a bit over.
Sorry, I do beg your pardon. And we only want to see the National Park, Pickering and its people to thrive, and for their unique historic railway to continue to benefit the town. We need decent quality facilities, and we hope you'll support the proposal. Sorry, I didn't see you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gary, is there anything you'd like to come
back on?
Yes, just briefly, Chairman. I mean, clearly this is a significant application, and I think clearly there are significant benefits to the scheme. There are also potential impacts of the scheme that we've had to consider and decide whether or not we think the impacts are acceptable, Chairman. And with particular regard to matters like flooding, also matters of amenity, particularly with regard to Rock Cottage in particular, but not exclusively Rock Cottage, and weigh all of those things in the balance, Chairman. I think I would take issue, though, with Mr. Potter's comments about the drainage flooding issues. It's also pollution control issues around drainage, because that really has been given such a grilling by the various bodies, and in those bodies I include the Environment Agency, Yorkshire Water, the lead local flood authority in particular, the County Council, but also the Internal Drainage Board as well. It's not in the Internal Drainage Board area, but obviously it feeds potentially into that, and all of whom have looked at the information and given it a rigorous going over, and to the extent that the lead local flood authority actually was expressing concerns about some of the information that was submitted, particularly around matters of runoff rates and pollution control. And that did result in a further technical note being produced, which was only cleared last week by the lead local flood authority. You'll note on the recommendation that the conditions 8 through 17 are all to do with drainage one way or the other, either relating to flood control, pollution control, matters of floodwater storage, attenuation, taking spoil off site so that it's not left in the valley floor. But I would stress that we have addressed the tests that Mr. Potter's arrived at. It is referred to in the report, and we've taken the view as officers that there isn't a site available at a lower risk of flooding. And that's clearly the first step in a sequential test. And I would point to members to the issues of flood risk and drainage issues in the report, Chairman, because the vulnerability classifications of this type of development, together with that judgment on the sequential test, does mean that we've taken a view as officers, but we are not the local planning authority, so that's why there's not a note on the file until we've actually made a formal decision, Chairman. You as a local planning authority tonight might disagree with this professional recommendation, even though it's backed by all four of the drainage bodies that we see before us. But that does then trip us on to the next test, potentially, which is called the exception test. But because it's in a less vulnerable use, it didn't actually even need to pass an exception test, but nevertheless they've gone on to do that. So our view is that there's been a very rigorous assessment of flooding as particular as an issue. It couldn't be in a more sensitive location next to Pickering Beck upstream of the town, and for that reason it's been given a real good looking at, not just by officers but also by the technical bodies responsible for drainage and flooding issues. The other matter that I think is relevant is really the impact of the operations on the amenities of the occupiers of Rock Cottage, because they are quite close to the site, as the report points out. But I would draw the difference between the activities that will be, in all probability, going on in the carriage stable, as opposed to the repair building, which is further to the north and actually will be a very different building. It's a different building because it has, I'll use the word with hesitation, solid walls, when actually they're rock-filled gabion walls which actually let water through. The ends of the building are shown with cladding and glazing and are solid to that extent, and with solid doors, but they will still permit water flow through the building. And so I don't wish that to be, that there is, I think the note that members got circulated that I've not seen or didn't see till today was suggesting that there was some inconsistency in that. But as Mr. Scott pointed out, the drawings that we have are planning drawings, not technical construction drawings, which will, to pass these conditions to meet the requirements of the drainage bodies, will have to demonstrate that the flows of water, wherever they're going, are not impeded by the development. So we remain confident that that will be the case, Chairman. It is a balanced decision, but from an officer point of view, Chairman, we feel the balance of the decision is in favour of the applicant. and so we're recommending approval, but to subject to these what I can only describe as very stringent conditions.
Thank you. Do members have any questions for the officer? Councillor Mrs. Shales.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just wonder how many coaches there are at the moment which need to be repaired, refurbished and so on. As I think I understood, hope correctly, from the first gentleman who spoke, that in fact they cannot get other trains and coaches now because of the difficulties, of course, of the kind of way they are run today. But I wonder how many are there actually at Pickering or elsewhere that have got to be renewed generally.
I don't have any information on the total carriage stock that's up and down the line, but it's quite considerable. I mean, the buildings, as I understand it, have been designed to largely take the carriage stock that the North York Moors Railway has. So when you look at the report, the carriage stable itself, if it was just containing carriages, can contain 37. Okay. And then the repair facility building, dependent on how it's used, can probably take another 9 if it was absolutely ram-packed full. But I think they've obviously got to have a space to manoeuvre them round. So 37 and 9 is 46 in total. So I can't say to you exactly that they've got 46, but this is to give covered storage and repair workshop facility for what they have.
I don't think I need to ask another question.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs. Sanderson.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm very sorry, but I think I need to declare a personal non-prejudicial interest. If the application is on land belonging to the Trout Farm, then I do know the owners, and also to declare that I'm a member of the Lead Local Flood Authority. The questions, and sorry, Gary, you'll have to indulge me on this because I've come to this a bit late. It's a farm. It's a fish farm, isn't it, that the land belongs to? So I'm just wondering what the permitted development rights would normally be under that circumstance.
I think it's been a long time since it was a functioning fish farm. I guess on the parcel of land, I can pan back through, that the parcel of land that the buildings are actually being proposed on wasn't any part of the fish farm, it's just a paddock of land. The fish farming is actually predominantly in this part of the valley on the opposite side of the tracks. So I think you can see where the excavations are, but I don't think there was any fish farming carried out on this parcel.
But technically as a farm there would be allowed so much permitted development, presumably.
There are permitted development rights for fish farming in a similar way as there are to any farming. So we don't get that many applications for it, but there are permitted development rights for fish tanks and various bits and pieces.
It wouldn't include a shed of this size?
No.
Okay.
No.
The other question. The river, I probably should know, is it main rivers or ordinary rivers status?
It's main river controlled by the EA.
So we've got that safeguard from the Environment Agency.
The Environment Agency were a consultee on this, and obviously their comments are in the report and have led to a variety of conditions, but they haven't objected to the application.
Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. I just wonder, because I hadn't realised until I got the papers, why we were considering a cesspit as opposed to a septic tank. Because it seems to me a cesspit will then allow, in times of flood, that sewage to come out, whereas the septic tank you can empty and take it away. Sorry, I might be being stupid, but it does worry me. We are over the coralline aquifer, and I don't want any contamination situations.
In a situation where there was no risk of contamination, that probably would be the better option, because in an ideal world you'd start off with a main sewer and you go all the way down the line to a cesspit. But in essence, because of where we are and because of that, it does need to be sealed. It can't have anything going to ground or to watercourse. The issue there is around the capacity of the tank and its surrounding area, so that it can contain anything and everything. So it's the safest.
So it will be sealed?
It will be sealed from the ground and from the surrounding water courses, yeah.
Thank you.
Councillor J. Andrews.
I noticed on the plans that the red outline, the railway did have a 5-year lease with the O'Donnells, I think, for the trout farm and the outbuildings. And did that run out in 2015? Was that renewed, or is this a whole new application?
The red line that they're showing does include. Sorry, I'm reverberating. Could you mind?
Oh, sorry.
does actually show that side of the river, but it doesn't actually propose any development in the Stew Pond area. I think on the site visit, the situation relating to the lease was that a longer-term lease was being negotiated for the trout pond, you know, the defunct trout pond area, but that's not yet been concluded. But the reason the red line includes that is because it includes the new bridge over the Beck as well in the access improvement. Sorry, I can't answer your question. I think there's a longer-term lease being negotiated.
At the moment, they don't have the lease for that anymore, because I think it was up in 2015, yes?
Sure. There's a nodding going on in the background.
Yeah. Right. Okay, thank you.
Are there any further questions for the officer? If not, we shall move into debate. Councillor Andrews, as the ward member, would you like to take this one?
I think I'm just going to get on with my speech now. Nottingham Moors Railway is one of Pickering's, if not Pickering's, biggest asset. I had the pleasure of working on the Pullman many years ago, and I have seen the railway grow into a worldwide attraction. No matter where you go, people have either visited or heard of it. So as much as I would like to support this application, I cannot. My reasons being, SP6 of the local plan states the industrial sites with Pickering being in the southeast and southwest of the town. There is no mention of industrialising the northern aspect of Pickering, and this, in my view, is an industrial application. In fact, when you look at SP10 of the local plan and the physical infrastructure of Rydale, it says we look to maximise the green corridors. Pages 56 to 61 of your agenda show a very good example of a green corridor that is in an area of high landscape value. I have a lovely quote from a Mrs. Reed of Pickering when we were fighting the right-of-way closure from Wells Walk to the Green Lane, and the Green Lane is being the route we took on the site visit past Rock Cottage. Her words were, "This path is the main artery from the heart of Pickering into the lungs of the countryside," which leads me to the SP20 of the local plan, which I believe was addressed by Pickering Town Councillor Mal Danks. New development will not have an adverse impact on the amenity of present or future occupants, the users or occupants of neighbouring land or buildings, or the wider community by virtue of its design, use, location and proximity to neighbouring uses. Impacts on amenities can include noise, dust, odour, light flicker, loss of privacy, natural daylight, or being an overbearing presence. I think we can be in no doubt that these two structures will tick the majority of those boxes. RDC committed £1 million to the slowing flow project, and this to date has not been tested. As the planning authority, notwithstanding the arguments already put, I feel it would be irresponsible to approve this application on a flood zone 2 and 3 with the lead flood authority's initial recommendation for refusal and their ongoing concerns. I feel that we cannot hide behind them. In simple terms, if we get a long period of protracted rain and the town floods, as this was all about slowing the flow, not stopping flooding, people will say, well, it's common sense. This would happen. The powers that be allowed these buildings to be constructed on a floodplain between a multi-million pound bund and the town it was constructed to protect. I believe this is a rushed application due to the timescale of funding available. Rather than this authority giving the thumbs up to this, I would like to see all parties working together to look for a sensible alternative, as I believe alternatives haven't been fully explored. If the NUMI doesn't get this application, they will not cease to be. I'm sure they will go from strength to strength, and I will support them any way I can. And I would hope, as fellow planners, you would support me in not supporting the Office of Recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Paul Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. I would very much like to support this application. But I am concerned about the flooding aspects. Myself, Councillor Potter and Councillor Sanderson attended a meeting last week when the county, the lead authority was represented, and so was the drainage board, and we were and we mentioned that we understood that the requirements and criteria for judging the amount of water that runs off land had proved that was used in this country had proved unsatisfactory in the United States of America, and had been and had been tightened up. But we were told, as these were the requirements which were in force, we had to abide by them. Although I would like to agree with this application and approve it, I am rather concerned about the flooding aspects, and I'm not sure which way I'm going to vote at the moment.
Thank you, Councillor Mrs. Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It seems to me that the economic aspect of this is really quite important. There is an enormous amount of new building going on in Pickering, and eventually it's going to bring in many more people, I think, to see the railway and to use it. It is all very popular at the moment. People must acknowledge that. I'm looking at the list of people who've been consulted, Madam Chairman. The Parish Council, I know Mrs. Andrews is a copy of the, is a part of this. It says subjects brought to flood groundwater valuation. Well, is that or is that not, or has that or has it not been sorted out? Because that is important, obviously. What I've heard, it seems to me that it's not going to be a major thing, but I could be wrong. I would like other people to know this. And I noticed that Councillor Sanderson is a member of the one which is also quoted here, the lead local flood authority. But various other people have said this, and all these people are important because they all have some sort of bearing on the application. There is no objection from the Internal Drainage Board. The Environmental Health Officer recommends conditions. I don't know what these are or how these would affect it, but could tie up with the matter of sewage that Councillor Mrs. Goodrick was referring to a bit earlier. I mean, myself, I feel this would be a good thing for people. It would be a good thing for Pickering. It would help the economy. It would mean that the railway was not going to completely fall into disuse. It would mean that those carriages, and I have known people who have worked tirelessly on one or two of those in the past to get them back to the sort of original way in which they looked, and they're absolutely fantastic. And people use the railway, of course, for parties. I remember friends of mine going and having a wedding reception and so on, and on the whole of the line, which was quite different and so on. So I think I would have to be absolutely completely sure that this was going to be a very bad thing, because at the moment it seems to me that it's something that is going to benefit Pickering and that it will be really worth doing. And it's also going to bring more jobs in. I think you said, Gary, something like 50 new jobs. Somebody else mentioned hundreds, but I mean, if there's 50 new jobs, well, in this day and age, that might be a very good thing. So I'm a bit puzzled in a way that we've had, though I respect the members from Pickering, who live there after all, know about it, are really against this. So I would quite like to have somebody else speak and see whether they share any of my sort of hopes for this continuing going on, or whether there are other arguments which need to be put in order to put it down. Thank you.
Thank you. I think Gary just wanted to come back there.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairman. I just think there was probably a couple of questions in there, Mrs. Shields, about what the town council had said in terms of responses, and those comments were actually appended to the January meeting when we submitted that, but I'm not sure if everybody's got access to that, but it's only a couple of paragraphs, Chairman, if you just wanted me to read it out so you know what the Town Council has said. Okay. So this was from a response that we received on the 20th of December. The Council heard arguments both for the proposed development and against it, all the points being cogently made. Amongst the points raised against the proposal were the unsuitability of the proposed structures both in their scale and purpose in an area of high landscape value, their siting in flood zone 3, which again we've heard again tonight, i.e. land that has been assessed as having a 1 in 100 or greater annual probability of river flooding, the presence of groundwater and whether attenuation proposals could be effective, noise and light pollution. Objectors to the application also referred to the quarry at Newbridge as a possible alternative location, the feasibility and viability of which should be explored. Representatives of the railway explained the rationale for the construction of the carriage stable, repair shop and attendant development and at the chosen site and not the quarry, which again we've heard about that tonight. Members recognised the strength of feeling against the proposals, were clearly aware of the issues involved in the application and expressed their sympathy for those members of the public who live close to the proposed site. However, the Council recognised the importance of the railway to the well-being of the town and how the proposals would ensure the viability of the railway in the longer term and thereby continuing well-being of Pickering. The primary concern was that the development should not increase the threat of flooding to the lives and properties local to the site and in the town. The Council was aware that the Environment Agency would be evaluating the proposed mitigation works and Yorkshire Water would be analysing potential risk to groundwater. That was received on the 20th of December, and on going back to the Town Council, a response was received from the Town Clerk saying no vote, because we wanted to try and distill that into what the Town Council actually thought. No vote was taken, but the feeling of the meeting was to support the proposal, subject to EA and Yorkshire Water evaluation of the proposals to deal respectively with development in the floodplain and potential contamination of groundwater. Now, since then, we've now had clearance from the Environment Agency, Yorkshire Water, the lead local Flood Authority, the County Council in particular, and also the IDB. We didn't need to consult the IDB, but we did because, you know, there's an ultimate feed-through. So all of the drainage bodies and flood authorities and pollution control bodies in relation to drainage or groundwater issues have looked at the information and said they are content that the application can be approved, but subject to what I would only describe as quite rigorous conditions. And so there are 9 conditions in the 20 or so that are recommended that are relating to those matters. There was one extra question that you raised in relation to I'll call amenity issues, environmental health officer type questions, and they're listed in question conditions 18 through to 20 on the recommendation, Chairman, relating to hours of use of both the workshop facility, the stable, and also during construction, which is another key point. They also require a BS 4142 assessment in terms of noise to be carried out, and they also require details of odour control mechanism measures to be submitted and agreed, largely relating to the paint workshop that is shown in the repair facility building, although my understanding is that they are not proposing to use spraying equipment, it's hand-painted, but nevertheless that is also required as a condition. So there are 3 conditions from your environmental health specialist.
Thank you. Councillor Maud.
Thank you, Chairman. As a planning committee, it's important that we make sure that plans we approve aren't going to aggravate a flood situation. And I'm quite surprised at all the concern about this from what I've read in the reports, that there is no significant thing being raised about that. But the thing is, I live in Rillington, which is nowhere near Pickering, in regards to flooding and that there. But quite often, after long periods of rain, when normally Pickering would have flooded, people have commented and saying, did Pickering flood? No. Oh, they never mentioned it on the television, but I think it, you know, it's, and I've ridden on the train. I went on the Flying Scotsman. I was lucky, actually, and I saw the slow the flow works. What had been done, it was all landscape and looked beautiful, and so to my mind, that is working very well. It has been tested because there have not been any floods in Pickering since it was instigated. So I'm with Elizabeth Shields. I know she would like to see it approved, and so would I, actually. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Mrs. Sanderson.
Thank you, Chairman. I know this area fairly well, as many years ago I kept my first horse in the stable behind the museum. But I've come recently to this application, and my immediate concern when I saw the reports pack was for the potential for flooding. So I'm pleased to see the extra report documents that were contained, the extra report that was done. Mr. Potter says, and he refers to the MPPF and says it fails on the social element. So let's be realistic about this. Society fails when we don't have employment. So we've seen that £30 million, I think the gentleman said who was speaking, brings to the area between Pickering and Whitby. That's a huge amount. All the knock-on effect of tourism, of employment, and all that trickle-down. So Mr. Potter also says it fails on the environment, but the Leed Flood Authority have withdrawn their objection to refuse it on these grounds. So if we go and pass it, then it could go to appeal and we would lose at appeal almost certainly because the expert witnesses have in effect said there isn't an issue. Councillor Joy Andrews quotes SP6, which, just having a quick look at it, says new land and buildings for employment will be supported from the following sources in the following locations: Moulton, Norton, Pickering, Kirby Moorside, Helmsley. And it says conversion of existing buildings for employment purposes, expansion land, sites for major employers and established businesses. So I can't really see what the objection is there. And yes, I do share Councillor Shields' hopes. The facts that we do know are that Pickering, the surrounding area, does rely heavily on tourism. We've got the jobs. I can't see what's wrong with it. I will vote to approve this.
Thank you, Councillor. Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm not going to say or speak about what's gone before. For me, this is about a balance. Issues have been raised about social, economic and environment. The social issue is that the trains now stand out on the railway as it is, open to abuse, and that abuse was very highly publicised just recently, and that damage was significant. So I don't see what the difference is between them standing on the roadside, on the siding side, or being in a store undercover, except that it will protect those heritage assets significantly. Environmental. I went on the site visit. I looked at the ground. I looked at the beck. I looked at there is an option there to utilise the trout farm ponds for extra water storage if it's necessary. They're going to put a big pond in the bottom of there too, and make it into a boggy area to keep water. For me, this is about a balance, and the balance, the economic balance and the economic benefit for our tourism and for our employment far outweighs, I'm sorry to say, the social and environmental issues that are in our plan. So I am going to support this proposal that's come forward from the North York Roads Railway. It's a significant heritage asset. It brings significant employment and tourism to Rydale, and I hope it continues long into the future.
Thank you. I would like to add that I've listened to and respect the views of the ward member, but on this occasion I won't be able to support you. The economic employment and the conditions that the Environment Agency have put on the application have made me feel that we're able to support the application and let the Moors Railway do the valuable work that they're doing at present. Does any further members wish to speak? I haven't actually had a mover and a seconder, so I will move it from the chair, and Caroline, Mrs. Goodrick will second the application. I'll now put that to the vote. Thank you. Thank you. That's 7-4, one against and one abstention. So that application has been approved subject to the final clearance of the archaeological report. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item 7, pages 67 to 73 on your agenda, application land to the rear of the forge, Terrington.
Thank you, Chairman. Have all members been given a copy of the correspondence that was unfortunately omitted from the agenda papers? It was some redacted information from the applicant and his lender. I do apologise for that, Chairman. The correspondence is relatively brief, but if members need a minute or two to read it, I'm happy to just take a moment.
Yes, we'll just take a couple of minutes to read that information. Thank you.
It seems such a straightforward case. Could we just move to the vote?
I would prefer to have that information for you all to read that, and then we'll go from there. Are we happy if Gary starts the presentation? Is that okay?
I'll keep this very brief, Chairman. Members will recall back in November we discussed this application as it was then applied for, and I think various people have got themselves tied up in knots in terms of actually what they were applying for and what not, really. But following that meeting, there was a meeting with officers, and that also followed discussions with the council's legal team as to how best to address the issue that we found before us, because essentially the applicant complies with your current occupancy conditions for local needs occupancy, lives in the village, wishes to move to a bigger house in the village, and that involves some investment, Chairman, and that involved seeking out a lender, and I'm not sure to start off with that the lender actually fully appreciated the implications of our policy. But I think we've got to a situation now, Chairman, where subject to the additional bullet point to add to the normal condition, Chairman, which is as set out on condition 12, we've arrived at a situation where the lender's happy, the occupant is still meeting the local needs occupancy condition, as would any future occupier. Job done, Chairman. It took us three committees to get to there from November. I did say at the time I didn't think this would be a quick fix, but that's where we are. I hope the report's fairly straightforward, but I'm happy to try and answer any questions if they're needed. I think the applicant has registered to speak.
Thank you. I've got the applicant, Matthew Clark, registered to speak.
Hello, thank you. Since the first meeting on this planning application, but we've worked with Rydale planners and the legal teams, to develop some wording that would work both for the council and the local occupancy needs, addressing the concerns we raised previously, and would also work for our lending mortgage company to allow lending. But so we've scaled back a previous proposal, and we're only now looking at the addition of a mortgagee in possession clause that would allow us allow mortgage lending and would protect the mortgage lender in the case we were to default. But this change has been confirmed with our mortgage lender that if this addition was added to the existing clauses, then we would be able to get lending on the land. If this is approved today, myself and my family will be able to proceed with the purchase of the land and then be able to build a new home more suitable for our family, and allowing us to stay in the area that we currently live and our children go to school and we're close to our jobs. So I ask you please to support this the addition of this bullet point to the existing local occupancy clause, because I believe it will help both us now and also families in the future, and it will help the local occupancy clause work for a greater range of people rather than those who just don't require a mortgage. So thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? No, we'll move straight to debate. Councillor Mrs Goodrick, would you like to take this as your county ward?
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah. I'm really pleased we've got to this point, because I distinctly remember a planning meeting where Councillor Burr and I were looking for this deferral to find out if we could make sure that this could happen for this family, and I'm really delightful it has. At the same time, I've also got to say the local needs occupancy clause is there for a purpose, and this is an exception to that purpose. Despite the fact that he meets it, we've had to vary the condition for mortgage lending, so I'm very happy to support this now, and I hope it proceeds swiftly for the family.
Councillor Paul Andrews.
I haven't been involved in history, so I don't know what's gone on before, Chairman, but the amendment that is suggested is so logical and sensible that I can't see there can be any argument about it, and I was happy to second this proposal.
Thank you. Any other member wish to speak? Councillor Windress.
Just to ask, could that be added, will that be added to any local needs occupancy in the future? Because it will make it easier for getting the mortgages.
I think the answer to that is you'd need to change your policy for it to be a blanket sort of cover. But we are, I think, rapidly approaching, once we finish the sites document, reviewing the plan, reviewing how the policies are working in the plan. And I think that's the way that I would envisage it would be picked up as a blanket. I think if we've approved local needs occupancy dwellings so far and they're proving to be an issue, it's examples like this where it's coming forward that we're finding that we're dealing with it on a case-by-case basis and having to waive or vary or do whatever to the condition to do it. So I would envisage that would be picked up in the review of the plan. So it would probably be end of this coming year or start of next.
Thank you. It has been moved and seconded for approval, so I'll put that to the vote. That's unanimous and the application has been approved. Moving on to agenda item 8, application land at Stamford Bridge Road, Sandhutton, pages 74 to 116 on your agenda.
The application site comprises a mainly mature commercial woodland, which is located 1.6 kilometres south of Sandhutton and approximately 2 kilometres to the west of Buttercram. The application site adjoins Jolly Day's glamping site, and it will share their existing access onto the sea road between Buttercram and the A166. The area of the application site is approximately 15.8 hectares, and for that reason it has been categorised as a major application, although we haven't received any letters of objection or support. The application seeks permission for the change of use of this parcel of land to form a woodland ferry trail, with the erection of a single-storey building to form a reception cafe and toilet block. That building will also form a museum and storytelling area. The application will also require the formation of car parking improvements to existing tracks and the creation of new tracks. And the ferry trail will lead its way around various focal point structures. And this application will also see the introduction of a reed bed system for foil drainage. So this shows the access that was described. It has already served the glamping site, so it is quite well formed. And this is leading up the access to the parcel of woodland. You can see it's quite dense woodland, so any of the aspects that we're talking about as part of this application will be very well screened. We've had a response confirming no objection from the highways officer at North Yorkshire, and that's subject to an additional pass in place being installed within this area here, which is just closer towards the actual entrance to the woodland. So this shows the area which will lead down to the parking glade, and the parking provision will provide for 60 cars. And it's in this existing glade, so it will actually limit any kind of tree felling required for that. So they've kind of made use of that existing area. As noted, a single-storey building will be there to provide amenities for users of this tourist site, and it will be located just in this glade. So again, that is limiting any kind of tree felling necessary for that. Now, you will have seen the plans of the building. It's of a modest scale, it's single story in nature, and consideration has been given to the construction materials, which are kind of fitting in this woodland location. In principle, this type of development we would support to kind of improve the tourist offer that Rydale has without impacting on the kind of sensitive woodland location. I would note that the woodland isn't protected, but this, in our view, wouldn't detract from the kind of characteristic of the woodland. The installation of the new pass and the formalisation of what are already there can be undertaken through the installation of permeable paving, and it's considered that that, again, wouldn't result in any harm to the woodland setting. In terms of amenity, there won't be any impacts. It's at such a distance from other businesses and residential dwellings. And we have consulted our countryside specialist on this application, and he's confirmed no objections to the proposal. And in his response, he kind of comments on the improvements this could have to the wildlife interest at the site. And also, there will be better kind of woodland management as a result of this. And the invasive species, I think it's rhododendron, will be better managed, and it'll allow some of the oaks to breathe a bit better. So there is an overall kind of enhancement there. There will be a condition recommended in terms of ensuring that the aspects put forward by the applicant in relation to woodland management is undertaken as part of this application, so that will be secured. Now, I did note that we have had no objection from the highways officer based on the additional pass in place, so that has been successfully dealt with. The one thing I would mention is the existing car parking that serves the glamping area. This has been laid out quite well with posts and white markers, and they're going to undertake the same kind of understated car parking layout within the new car park that's in the glade. This will help to kind of ensure that the 60 car parking spaces will be available for visitors should it become, you know, very successful, which is what we would hope. It will ensure that there will be sufficient car parking there and provided. So I think we've highlighted all the issues, and our recommendation is as indicated in the report. Oh, one more slide for you, which is this one, which is quite nice. It kind of indicates the kind of style that they will be going for. So it's quite natural and fitting in the woodland environment. I thought you might like to see that. So those are fairy houses, which apparently you don't see fairies, just the houses. Thank you.
Thank you. We have no speakers on this application. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
I'm just trying to look out on the plan. I'm sorry, I haven't been able to find it, where the reed beds are going to be.
So I think the reed bed is about 70 metres north of the single-storey building. And there is a photograph here which kind of shows one of the existing drainage channels. So it's, yeah, it's just to the north, number 7.
On page 82, it's near the number 7.
So yeah, it's drawing number NFT02 Rev A. Yeah, it's a very large application site.
Are there any further questions for the officer? No. Councillor Mrs. Goodrick, would you like to take this application?
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, it's in my ward and in my division. I am slightly concerned about the size of this building. I know it's low level, but it seems quite long, and that's my only concern. But I'm also mindful that it's well screened, it's off the beaten track. If you weren't going to visit it, you probably wouldn't even know it was there. I don't know whether they own the land or whether it's Oldby Park Estates and it's leased. I've no idea, but I suspect it might be. And if it's supporting the glamping and people and children will enjoy going into the countryside and making use of the facility and maybe even seeing some of the wildlife that's there, then I'm happy to support it and propose it for approval.
Thank you. Councillor Paul Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. I think this is wonderful. I love the Hobgoblin House. Really do. And I would second it.
Councillor Mrs. Shields.
Thank you. When I first looked at this, I thought, yes, this is excellent environment and so on, and a good woodland and so on. And then I looked at the title, Fairy, whether it's spelled F-A-E-R-Y or F-A-I-R-Y, I don't know. But when I'm going right the way through, I come to the end where there's a quotation from a professor in 1847 who obviously has a feeling about these little creatures. And so whether the people who are doing this have just thought this was a good name or whether they ought to take it a bit more seriously, let me explain. Half of my family is Manx and comes from the Isle of Man. And believe me, there are real fairies in the Isle of Man. I'm a Christian, but there are things you can't always explain. If you go to the Isle of Man, and should go, it's a microcosm of Britain. This does apply, Madam Chairman. If you go and fly, then you get on a bus or a taxi from the airport runway, Ronald's Way, into Douglas, which is the main town. And on that route, there is a bridge. It is called the Ferry Bridge. And before you get there, your taxi driver, bus driver, or whoever else will tell you, when we get there, we'll go more slowly, and you are all to say either, depending on the time of day, good morning, fairies, or good morning, or evening, or whatever it is. And you do it either going or coming back from the airport. And if you don't, the chances are I will have a puncture before I've got much further, and you'll miss your plane, or you'll miss your dinner at the hotel if it's going the other way. Now, I'm perfectly serious about this, and I wonder whether these people, when I saw the quotations, you see it right at the end there, very interesting, whether they are aware that there could be fairies of some kind in this area. Perhaps Mrs. Goldrick will know better than I do. Or whether they just use it because it's an attractive word, you know, and it's obviously going to attract children and kiddies to the area, and that's a good thing. But I think I say beware, because if there are real ones around, then there may be rather more, you know, fun and games than you expect. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Shales. Councillor Maud.
Well, on that lighter note, then I'd like to say that I have five granddaughters aged between 4 and 10, and they all believe in fairies, so I shall have to take them in summertime, if it's approved.
Right, it has been moved and seconded for approval, so I shall put that to the vote. That's unanimous, and the application has been approved.
Chairman, for the next one, may I, after the planning officer has spoken, may I make a very brief statement and then disappear? And could somebody then collect? I shall leave the room, and could somebody then please make sure they collect me?
Absolutely, will do. Right. Agenda item 9, application at the Grass Verge off Castle Howard Road, Moulton.
Thank you. So this application relates to the retrospective advertising consent which has been sought for one of the 4 Welcome to Moulton signs that have been erected in the last year or so. This one has come to committee as we've received 2 objections in relation to it, whereas the other 3 have been approved this afternoon, I believe. So this is the one situated along Castle Howard Road. It's approximately 1.6 metres high and 1 metre wide and is pole mounted. On the eastwards approach to the town, it has Welcome to Moulton, Yorkshire's food capital. And on the outward approach, it has that message, do come again. And in determining advertising consents, the planning authority can only give weight to 2 aspects, one of which is visual amenity and the other which is highway safety. So in terms of visual amenity, we can't comment specifically on the wording of the sign. However, I would note that it is a neat and landscaped sign. So really it kind of isn't incongruous and isn't out of scale, and it effectively does its job in welcoming visitors to the town. Highways officers, in terms of highway safety, have confirmed that they've got no objection to the sign. However, we have had, as I've noted, 2 objections referencing a number of issues. That was fully summarised in the report that you've received, but amongst other aspects, highlighting concerns over positioning, scale, highway safety, the use of resources, and the materials that it's been constructed in. However, whilst they've been acknowledged, we don't consider that it's harmful to visual amenity, and there's no highway safety aspects, so we are recommending the sign for approval. So the recommendation is as outlined previously. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Anders, would you like to speak now before we go into questions?
Yes, Chair.
Very briefly, Morton has been really working hard to improve its appearance, to raise its profile, and to generally become a very attractive place, somewhere where visitors would like to go to. And there were a number of rotting and badly maintained signs all around the town. We took them down, and we put up these new ones. We took a vote on the wording, that's a town council, and it was unanimously agreed that it should say "do come again" instead of "please come again." I really do hope that members will support the town council in this. The town council has worked wonders to transform the town, and so please support it.
Thank you. Could you just turn your microphone off, please, before you...
I'm so sorry.
No, lovely. Thank you. So we're in questions. Yes, Mrs. Shields, would you like?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
The officer, I'm sorry, I don't know your name, I've forgotten it. I beg your pardon, Eve. No mention was referred, though I think it is actually in our agenda, to the challenge that notice, not the bit about Malton, I mean, but the fact that this is Yorkshire's food centre or food, whatever it is. It worries me slightly. Is somebody else somewhere within North Yorkshire, perhaps, I'm not sure, maybe within our own district, but with another district, going to challenge that at some time? And has anybody sort of taken that up on the legal side just to make sure that what they're saying is correct? It actually vaguely offends me that Malton can boast this particular thing. And on the other side of the river in Norton, we have many, many people coming for food at the food bank. And it really sometimes quite disgusts me. I don't often go to it. It's usually crowded. And so I just wonder if there is a possibility that this may be challenged at some time. And, you know, people should be aware of it, Chairman.
Chairman, I think the issue here is, I think as Neve's tried to explain earlier, it's not about the content of the sign, but the issue. So I understand what Councillor Mrs. Shields is saying, but it could actually say something quite offensive, and actually there are other laws to deal with that. I take the point that there may be other towns and settlements in Yorkshire who equally would claim to be the food capital. In fact, that was the sign that had food painted over with pothole at one point. But, you know, equally, we are where we are. And the amenity of the sign, the size and scale of the sign and its location is not disproportionate for where it sits on the entrance to the town. And it doesn't raise a highway safety issue, Chairman. So in our terms, making a planning decision, we're very limited in terms of what we can take issue with.
Councillor Mrs. Sanderson.
Thank you, Chairman. Just on a broader planning issue, really. I remember several years ago sitting on this committee when the big signs came before planning committee and they were refused. It just surprises me, and I wonder why we think that Malton Town Council don't think they need planning permission, and they don't understand, you know, that you can't just put a sign up. You know, it is one of our overseeing councils, and I just wonder why they don't know and why we have to go through retrospective and knowing that they judge planning committees and consult on them every month at the meetings, why they don't know it needs it.
I think ultimately the other signs on the approaches from Pickering and on the A64 on the Malton approach from York did get permission in the end. But and they applied for it and got it. I think on this particular instance, and you know, ignorance is no defence, but I think it was perceived that those signs actually were covered by the control of advertisement consent regulations, and in fact it turned out that they weren't. Hindsight's perfect vision, but you know, we are where we are. We've had four, there are four of those in different locations around the town. The other three have not met with any objections from anybody, but this particular one did, from a resident who lives not too far away, or is from a property. I think the two letters were from the same property. So in effect we've got one household objecting to the sign, but it's just one of those things. I think, you know, it's not the first time we've dealt with a retrospective application. It's regrettable it's from the town council.
Councillor Mrs Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. Like my colleague Councillor Sanderson, I'm disappointed that this is a retrospective application, because I think if it had come to committee we might have had a different view. Not a view that says we didn't want a sign or we're not having a sign, but a view of, well, whether that sign in that location is the most appropriate sign we could have. And frankly, I take some sympathy from the letter that's come in to say that it would have been better if it had been a stone-built sign. And because it's now retrospective, we don't have, as a committee, the option to debate that or to look at that or to look at the plans, because it's just been landed on our lap. Now, I've got nothing against Moulton advertising itself, welcoming people, asking them to come again, being the food capital of Yorkshire. I have no issue with that. What I have issue with is that this committee has been denied the opportunity to debate it. And now, this evening, we've got a retrospective application that we will probably approve, but actually, I'm not awfully fond of that sign either.
Any more questions for the officer? Councillor Hope. Sorry, we're technically still in questions. Yes.
I take it that not Moulton Town Council have paid for these signs themselves. They're not highway approved or anything. So they've paid for their own sign. They've just done it without planning. Thank you.
Any further questions? No, we shall move into debate. As the ward members left the room, would anybody else like to take this up? No, right, well, I'll go for it then. Yes, I agree with my colleagues that it is regretful that the application is retrospective, and I perhaps will labour that point when the ward member does return to the room. And I do actually share some sympathy with Councillor Mrs Shields, although it is not a planning matter. I do actually, you've awoken my other side, and I do take that on point that, you've got constituents with food bank needs, and it could be perceived as not being very thoughtful from the other side of the river. However, unfortunately, that isn't a planning ground. And as the application is retrospective, I will move approval of the application. Does anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Shields.
I shall probably vote against it, Madam Chairman. Sorry.
Aye. All right. Do I have a Councillor Maud?
I'll second approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to speak on the application? It has been moved and seconded, and so we will put that to the vote. Thank you. That's 6-4, 1 against and 1 abstention. Therefore, the application has been approved. Thank you. Councillor Paul Andrews, thank you for returning to the room. As you missed that debate, we'd just like you to be aware that the council members do feel it is extremely unfortunate that the town council had to go about retrospective applications for the planning for the signs, when they are consulted on planning applications on a monthly basis and should really know the procedure that is involved with putting in applications. Thank you.
I can't remember how that came about, but it was not deliberate.
I'm sure it wasn't, but it's rather unfortunate and embarrassing.
On behalf of the town council, I would apologise, Chairman.
Thank you. We shall now move on to agenda item 10, which is application for agricultural contractors at Wellham Road, Norton. Thank you.
Thank you. This application site is a triangular plot of land that has a total area of about half a hectare. It's located within the development limits of Norton, and it's approximately 100 metres to the east of Wellham Road, directly to the north of Lakeside Way and directly to the south of Springfield Garth. And this shows the site access that's from Wellham Road. And this shows a view from the site looking eastwards, or sorry, westwards. So this application seeks approval for the refurbishment and recladding of the existing agricultural contractors' buildings that you can see there. This involves the recladding of the southwest and northwest elevations and the cladding of the currently open southwest and northwest elevations. This will be in corrugated steel to match what's already present on site. The design and access statement notes that the buildings on site are in need of refurbishment and recladding in order to maintain their current use to the client. We've researched into the plan and history of the site, and we can confirm that the site has a legal agricultural contractor's use, which has been established for several decades. So just looking at these photographs again, this is another view from the east looking westward, and you can see some of the residential dwellings to the north of the site along Springfield Garth. This is taken from that side of the building that you've just seen, looking towards the east of the site, and it kind of shows the triangular nature of the plot. This is a view of the agricultural contractor's building as it is now. It's a glimpsed view from within Springfield Garth to the north. And this is from the very west of the site, looking towards the western elevations of the buildings. And then this is from a series, one of the pedestrian walkways, the public rights of way, which is running along the south of the site. And that's showing the currently kind of open nature of parts of the buildings. That again is the western elevation of the building. And then these are just some kind of closer images to show kind of the state of repair of the building as it is currently. So I'll just come back to that. The site has a really complex plan and history. We've refused three outline applications for housing schemes there. The most recently refused scheme was in 2017, so it's, I think it was refused in December, and it was due to the site failing the sequential test, which is essential for any development in flood zone 2 and 3A. It was also refused. There was concerns about the remodelling of ground levels and whether that could potentially exacerbate the flood risk to the neighbouring properties. There was also a reason for refusal in relation to potential impact upon neighbouring dwellings in terms of amenity, and we weren't satisfied with the details in terms of surface water runoff and ensuring that that wouldn't contribute to flood risk. With regard to this application, which is simply in relation to recladding of this building, we've had three letters of formal objection and a further letter which highlights concerns and was seeking additional information. Norton Town Council also raised the same issues in relation to uncertainty about potential future uses for this site. But I can just quickly go through the most recurring concerns that we've received, which were severe flooding already being present on this site, concerns that there were no details as to the reason behind the refurbishment for the buildings or their future use. There were concerns that if this is to be commercial, what the nature of potential future businesses could be and what impact that could have on levels of traffic and noise levels. It was also noted that the kind of historic use of this site has had really significant impacts on the access road due to heavy machinery and plant machinery. One of the responses said they would welcome the relaying of the road and more information on intended units at the site. So we went back to the agent, we sought clarification and any further information they could give. in addition to what I'd previously read out from the design and access statement, which had said it was just to maintain the current building and the current use. The agent has come back to confirm that it's an application whose purpose is essentially for repair and security. They've themselves acknowledged that any change of use would, of course, be applied for, and there's no proposal for any other business or activity other than what's there now or the agricultural contractor's use that they can inform us of as part of this application. They went on to say the site's fallen into disrepair following several years of unsuccessful attempts to gain a residential permission on the site, which I'd outlined previously, and its current use is intended to continue unaltered. They've mentioned some of the security issues and vandalism and antisocial behaviour that have apparently been undertaken in this site. And with regard to this, we do acknowledge that within their original design and access statement, they did note that that was the reason for which they'd intended this application to come forward. In this respect, while we've had further confirmation on that, the original information wasn't misleading and has been confirmed. So while we do acknowledge the concerns of the people who have responded, in this instance, it is simply a recladding exercise in our mind, and anything beyond that will have to come in for specific permissions. So we wouldn't be able to give any weight in determining this application to the potential future changes of use or the flood risk that could occur should any kind of new schemes be delivered on this site. We can't require any upgrades to the existing roadworks whenever this is just an application for recladding. And we don't think it would have any impact in terms of flooding, and it wouldn't necessarily set any kind of precedence for any future applications that come in the site. If a different use does come in for permission, we'd give it full consideration against all the material planning considerations at that point. So hopefully we've issued the outlined the issues there appropriately, and we'd move to recommend approval for this. Thank you.
Thank you. We do have a speaker on this application, an objector, Frank Greatorex. Would you like to put the microphone on? It's the button in the centre. One on the centre. No, centre in the middle.
How's that?
Thank you.
Done it. Thank you. I live at 31 Mill House, which lies adjacent to both Lakeside Gardens and the site of the planning application by Crown Associates for improvement of buildings. One of the objections that I had, I think you've already answered, which dealt with the fact that there'll be no new business. So there we go. But my concern is that the developers do not intend which access road. When they do the cladding job, they're obviously going to need access to get the cladding materials in, and that's what concerns me, because they would then have to, I assume, use the access road which goes in front of my house, which is Mill House. And by doing that, they would service the planned improvements to the site. So my first point, I wanted two provisos, was that this was not a precursor of additional commercial operations commencing on the site, and it seems that that's not going to happen. So then we go on to access, and this is where my objection lies. The access road is a part of a public footpath, which on one side a small lake, and on the other side there's Mill House, my dwelling. This section has shown serious deterioration due to the use of medium to heavy agricultural plants, particularly in some years, particularly some years ago when sugar beet was progressed at the site. Uses of the access road are two logging concerns, which you probably know about, and council vehicles. Plant is the main cause of erosion, but further deterioration is being caused due to four drainage ducts running under the public right-of-way and Mill House being partly blocked due to heavy regrowth in the lake. Compared to 3 years ago, only two ducts work and the flow is half what it was then. Result is that the water table has risen, causing standing water on the public right of way and the area in general. After only a couple of hours of rain, the public path becomes an almost impassable muddy mire, causing great difficulty for the public and particularly school children using the route to and fro from Norton School. In conclusion, the result of Crown Associates using the access road for their plans, coupled with drainage problems, could be pretty serious and not in the interest of the general public.
30 seconds left.
Lakeside Garden and its right of way. However, if anyone doubts the scenario of deterioration by plant, I suggest that they compare the state of the tarmac walking paths around Lakeside Gardens that show little or no signs of erosion compared to that of the tarmac on the access road, which is now virtually non-existent. If Crown Associates do not intend to implement the 2 points, I have no objection to their application, but if they're going to use that as the access road, I do. Finally, just 15 yards away from my front door is a large notice that reads, Lakeside Gardens welcome. This area is managed by Rydale District Council. Please cherish this fragile space. So that's what I have to say. Thank you very much, and thank you for listening to me. And it was a bit garbled.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
No, you're
cheers. Right.
Could you just turn the microphone off for me, please?
Thank you
very much. Thank you.
Chairman, I think most of the points that really raise about the access point, I think probably are sort of straying into the realms of sort of property law meets also public right of way issue. I think there's a public right of way issue perhaps going on there in terms of drainage and ducts, because there's the drainage underneath the access way, which obviously isn't something we would directly deal with, but I mean that's perhaps something to be looking at separately, and we can make our own contacts with the area office to see whether the drainage problem can be resolved in some way. But in terms of the actual development itself, I think it's more about the buildings at the moment are obviously in a fairly poor state of repair, and I think in itself it's not an unreasonable proposal. I think from the letters that I've read that come with the application, it's more the fear of what might come. But of course, if there was a change of use proposal, then that obviously would require planning permission, which would be dealt with in the usual way. I think regrettably, from the access use point of view, the agricultural contractors' activity, which is lawful, actually probably there is a legitimate use by vehicles coming down the access, which I take to be from the Wellham Road direction, because that's the only way you can get in with vehicles, where actually lawfully, assuming that there are rights with the property to get from A to B from Wellham Road, then potentially quite large vehicles could continue to go up and down there without any reference to this application whatsoever. So that I think that's just a dilemma of the fact that this is a backlanded plot in effect. It's also a backlanded plot in flood zones 2 and 3, which was the main reason why we refused planning permission for residential development on the site. So it's one of those awkward bits of land left over after the planning's taken place, and I think a lot of the new development has sort of, you know, effectively could sort of tied it into where it is, including the Lakeside Way development. But at the end of the day, this application is just a recladding proposal, so I think we don't have any planning issues.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the Officer of Council, Mrs. Goodrick?
Yeah, just picking up on flood zone 2 and 3, I mean, we've had an application this evening from North York Moors Railway where they've done as much attenuating of the building to allow the flood water through. If this is just a recladding job, what are they doing to attenuate the water being allowed to pass through on this flood zone, or are we just going to allow this? Do you see my dilemma?
Issue here at all in terms of, you know, where water would go if it came onto the site. The problem with the residential development was actually needing to lift, you know, basically take capacity out of the flooding area, which this doesn't seem to do. So the water would still infiltrate into the land.
Any further questions? We'll go into... Sorry, did you have a question, Brian? No. Okay, thank you. Mrs. Shields, would you like to take this one?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I find that my own thoughts on this particular application are reflected by a large number of people who've written in and spoken to me about it. Yes, it sounds fine, doesn't it? Every single little question set out and then a good answer to it. We need to cover the buildings. We must get the logs, you know, covered in and so on. You've seen the gaps there. These buildings are in quite a poor state, deteriorating in some places quite badly. And there has always been a concern when the applications have come in for the dwellings, as you know, three times, and we have refused it because on the area where at the moment they were wanting it, that is liable to flood, very much so. And the gentleman has spoken of the path and so on right by it, but it can get much worse than that because water goes into the gardens at the back. You've got a map, I think, on 129, not only at the back of Springfield Garth, but of course there's also the houses right down the side of Lakeside and around the bottom near Millbeck. It seems to me that they have gone overboard to try and make sure that the buildings are okay. And I've looked at every single piece where they've made a question or answered a question, and it seems that it's very straightforward and that perhaps, you know, there's nothing wrong in this. I have a suspicion that it's just too good somehow, all this recladding and all the work they're going to do. Fine, it'll be interesting to see what they do, and I do have a question about the materials they're going to use. But at the same time, I feel this could well be the sort of beginning of something else, another application coming in later. As you say, of course, that will have to be dealt with separately. I do understand that. But it just seems to me that suddenly for them to do something about these buildings is just about too good. It's too perfect somehow. After all the years and the time that's been spent where they've been looking as bad and as untidy as they do. I would like, I think, for agreeing that you do the cladding and the rest of it, I would like, and it does say that we should be able to see what kind of materials are going in. I think that is important before you give a final yes to this. I think it's going to be difficult to say no. I would like to say no, but the buildings do need attention, very much so. But if it may well be, you know, the first step towards another application on the rest of the ground, which is really quite unsuitable for building and residence, houses of any kind. And that's why, as a committee, you, I've not always been on it, just recently, have actually turned it down. So I would like to know that there was going to be the possibility of knowing the materials, seeing what they are, seeing that they're suitable, and not something sort of just put up very quickly in order to sort of fulfil the application. I have sympathy with the gentleman who lives in Mill House. There is only this one exit, one entrance and so on, and it could be quite difficult, that. But it has been used in the past, unfortunately, for the similar kind of work and agricultural purposes, and it's therefore it hasn't been whatever it would be from that particular title, so we're stuck with that. But I would like to know what other people who know this or acquaint you with this particular site would have to say on it.
Councillor Maud.
Thank you, Chairman. I am well familiar with this area. I used to go and pick up machinery from there when I was hiring machinery from them, but that's 20, 30 years ago, and I remember the buildings. Yeah, they're the same buildings that were there then, and agricultural buildings, when they fall into a state of disrepair, are a real eyesore. So when I saw that this wants recladding and sheeting, it's going to be a much improvement for anyone living close by and looking at it. I mean, we can't say you've got to remove it, it's no longer there, because the right to carry on an agricultural practice there apparently is already there. So I think I would like to move that we allow this to go ahead. But I do share Elizabeth's concerns about the materials that are used. We don't want a quick fix job doing it. It's got to look tidy when it's finished. It is in a residential area, although we won't allow a residential property to be built there. So I would like to say, granted, provided we know what kind of materials that are actually going to be used. Thank you.
Do you want to come back now?
Yes, please. Just to confirm, the applicant has confirmed that the recladding will be undertaken with corrugated steel roof panels and corrugated steel wall cladding, so that matches the material that's currently there. And we've also recommended a condition to be attached that before the development's undertaken, details of all materials to be used on the development are submitted to us at the local planning authority for approval. So hopefully that will kind of control any potential impacts by virtue of inappropriate materials.
Does that mean then that members, I mean particularly local members, could have a look to see what there is, not just...
Normally the answer to that would be no, Chairman. The discharge of conditions is an officer decision. They're submitted and we deal with materials, we deal with drainage, we deal with whatever, but it's not a consultative process. You have to trust officers to be able to get on and make sure that they're doing their job. It's a time-consuming enough job as it is without dealing with this, Chairman. We discharge thousands of conditions a year.
Yeah, I'm not wanting to give you extra work, Jerry, in any way, but I'm just anxious to know the colours, and it may well be that colleagues of mine will also want to see that before it goes ahead, you know, what the colours are. Okay, it may be the same as the buildings, but they're a bit discoloured in places in any case. So that was all. I was just asking if I might be able to have a quick look, not a general consultation.
Councillor Joy Andrews.
It's more of a question, really. Sorry, I missed those questions. It's just this development or this plot here, how... I don't know the area, so I don't know the history of it. Was the housing development... Is it fairly recent, or is it... were the barns there before the houses? That's, I think, probably right. Have these houses sort of added to the flooding issue within that area, presumably, as well? Or
no, the Lakeside development, I think, was an 80s, oh, right. 90s yeah. development, yeah. perhaps. But it's been there yeah. a while, but it's right next to the lake. There's the ponds, and the stream carries on all the way down.
Yeah. So that access was always there, Yeah. Okay, that's yeah, fine.
Does anybody... Councillor Paul Andrews.
Yes, Chairman. I share the suspicions of other members, but it looks to me as though we have no choice. And you have to ask, what is the alternative? Do you just allow the place to continue to deteriorate? I see that this site is in the middle of a residential area. I understand that it's on the floodplain, but that hasn't stopped us from granting planning consent for the first application this evening. And for the life of me, I can't see why we can't sort this out with houses. It would seem to me that the housing would be the most appropriate use.
Chairman, I think the flooding and water displacement issues would be somewhat considerable. Just to come back to the point, I think, Chairman, I mean, we can, Mr. Shields, we can let you know what's been submitted, you know, in terms of materials, but please appreciate we have to respond to it fairly quickly when we get those things in.
Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. We're back to balance, aren't we? And the balance is, do we allow that to continue as it is as an eyesore, or do we allow them to clad it? I don't know what the purposes are for the future. I'm deeply suspicious, but I'm a deeply suspicious person by nature. But I can't find a reason to say no. And so on that basis, I will propose it for approval.
Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I'm being gazumped. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Lovely. It has been moved and seconded for approval, so I shall put that to the vote. Thank you. Somebody not voted? Oh, we have. Okay. That's 8-4 and 1 abstention, so the application has been approved. Moving on to agenda item 11, application at 6 Willowgate, Pickering.
Thank you, Chairman. I think we've got a speaker on this particular one. Just a quick update. I think you've had a late page sheet just to highlight this application. It actually had received 3 letters of support from people in the vicinity. In fact, the support letters came from the occupier of number 7 Willowgate, Mr. and Mrs. Beaumont, from the old garage, Ms. Gibb, and then from the occupier of number 16 Burgate, which is the next road over, Mr. Finney. But you can see the comments that have been made and summarised in the late page. I thought it would be helpful just to show you just a few photographs, but I haven't got many, of this locality. In fact, it's just down the road from an application we dealt with a couple of committees ago, so you'll be familiar with some of the photographs, perhaps. I think the context for this is that obviously Willowgate has a certain character. There are, you know, Joy Andrew, Councillor Joy Andrew is wondering what I'm going to say there. But it's a lot of the buildings are back edge of the highway, so it's got a very sort of dense built form. That in itself creates some challenges in the sense that a lot of the garages and vehicular parking areas are very close to the road, so sometimes there are manoeuvring issues. This particular property already has a vehicular driveway onto Willowgate. And prior to this application, we did previously refuse planning permission under Office Delegated Powers for a flat roof garage of essentially the same proportions. It was a different design. It had a parapet roof on the wall, which was somewhat unusual. And this design is a response to that refusal, which actually shows when I show you the drawings. And you've seen the drawings undoubtedly on page 139. You'll see that inside profile or in front profile, essentially we've got a flat roof garage with a false pitch of tiles in just on the front of it. It is a design that we think we just simply feel is an inappropriate design in the conservation area. It's essentially a flat roof garage with a false pitch on the front of it. Looking at the drawings that are submitted on page 139, it's unclear why the flat roof is what it is, but the roof detail does talk about 50 millimetre pavers on rubber pads with a rubber membrane and a concrete screed, so it almost reads as though the roof is like a patio area, which is an unusual feature to say the least. Our view is twofold, and certainly the Conservation Officer feels that the building should be further forward on the site. Leaving that aside, the other issue is really a matter of, is this an appropriate design of building in the conservation area when everything else in the conservation area is a relatively narrow span, and even if it's single storey or two storey, it's got a pitched roof form, and it's got conventional clay pantiles in the main with stone walling. That is not replicated in the design, and you'll see from the plan that form, which is on page 138, that actually some of the issue here, I'm not sure quite why, but the building is 4.5 metres wide, so it's not a double garage width, but it's not a single garage width either. So it's a sort of a strange 1.5 vehicle width building. So if, for example, this was a 3-metre wide garage, which is a sort of conventional garage on a plot, then we could easily come up with a design that I think would have a typical pitch roof on it, which would be far more in keeping with the locality. But that isn't part of this flat roof design. We've got to deal with what we've got before us. So just swiftly moving on. This is, sorry, a very dark photograph, but this is looking down Wheelgate from the I always get it wrong, Whitby Road end, I always call it Hatcase Lane. So you're looking down past where we were looking the other day. And this is a view looking back up, and this is the site. So you can see the existing vehicular entrance, yeah, and you can see the gable wall of the end of the building with its windows facing the driveway. In fact, it's this is just looking a little bit further down. So this is further south, so looking at this. So this is to give you a feel for the character of the Willowgate, which is very, buildings really hard up against the roadway. In fact, unfortunately, this photograph doesn't quite show it, but that's a garage door there. So you've got people moving in and out in fairly tight locations, really. This view is front on, and although I do apologise for the darkness of this, but this is the Willowgate here. This is the parking area, and then the levels go up. So the garage would actually be sort of dug in effect. And what you'd end up with was effectively, instead of a sort of an elongated driveway, the garage would be sitting here, where it's partially screened by this hedge. There's a wall and a hedge. So at that point, that's what you're looking at it. I mean, ultimately, this site's in the conservation area. I personally, as an officer, I wouldn't be happy with this, probably not in a conservation area, but I'm certainly not happy with it in a conservation area. I think there is a design solution, but it doesn't, for me, involve a flat roof. It probably involves a revision to the size of the building, Chairman. I'm conscious of the fact this is the second application, so this is the free go. So if this is refused tonight, then a third application would involve a further fee. So an option could be to defer it and try and get a better design. It just occurred to me when I saw the site today that there is potentially a solution. But for me, it really isn't this flat roof design, which I think is out of kilter with everything else that's in the immediate vicinity.
Thank you. We do have the applicant to speak, which is Julian Dyson. Button in the middle, the front, in the bottom. Yeah, lovely. Thank you.
Our house has only one parking space, and as many families, we have two cars. Willowgate has little on-street parking. In fact, only 5 spaces down the whole length. There is also much pressure on nearby streets because they are so close to the middle of Pickering. I presume the parking difficulties were a consideration in the very recent approval of additional parking opposite behind 17 Burgate. The objection of the Building Conservation Officer is to the impact on the open space of the garden. However, the open space, which I agree is of value, will not be removed. The garden area is about 230 square metres and the garage would only be 25. And the top of the garage would be used as a patio area with the garden landscaped all around, with the existing garden areas to the front being maintained, and the garden should be added to the additional open character of the adjacent grass access to the allotments, which is 8 metres wide. The plans do not give adequate representation of the minimal visual impact of the garage, which will be screened by the plantings from the front of the garage area. The garage will be set back in the site and will be of would not be very obvious and against the rising land, with only a standard garage door and a pitch roof being visible. The conservation office does acknowledge that the degree of harm is only at the lower end of the less than substantial range. Another paragraph 14 of the same document needs to be considered as well. It says that presumption in favour of substantive development unless there are significant adverse impacts. To conclude, we really do need extra car parking in this area. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just very quickly, Chairman, I think that I had read the design right, and so it is intended to be used, the roof is intended to be used as a patio area. When you look at page 139, it's not immediately clear how you'd get up to that. I assume there must be some steps from the back garden to get up. The boundary wall shows a 705mm upstand, so there must be some steps to get up to that area, which sort of raises an issue in itself, which we probably weren't fully clued into. But it does suggest that people might be standing higher than they would at the minute if they were in the garden. So I think that in itself raises the issue that this design needs looking at again, I think. That's all I would say, Chairman. It just feels as though I've sort of clarified potentially another issue. But I think the fundamental one to start off with is the design and appearance of the building. I think if we get that right, it will have a pitch roof, in my mind, and that will do away with any paved, flat-roofed area that's been used as a raised patio. So I think there's a design issue that has a knock-on effect in terms of the use of the building.
Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Maud.
Thank you, Chairman. So if this is refused tonight, it may come back as a new application. If we defer it and for a site visit and just get a feel for it ourselves, because I mean, it's such a narrow street, and if you can get two cars off the road rather than one off the road, and the owner of the car wondering, or the other car wondering where the hell they're going to put it, you know, it must be a nightmare. I mean, there's the space there. It just makes sense that the garage should be back like that, and then and the second car can stand in front. I'm dead against refusing this here, because I have a son who lives in a persimmon home, you know, standing for two parking for two cars, one in the garage, one on the drive between the footpath and the garage. But there's no storage in the house. The garage is used for storage. There's only one car standing on this here short bit, and the other car's got to be on the road. And so when we go, God, it's a job parking in that street. And so I think we should look to try and get this second car off the road. So I can't, certainly can't refuse this. I think we should defer it for looking at again.
There wasn't a question there, was there, Brian?
I didn't wait for the question.
The question was, can it come back if we defer it?
Chairman, if you defer it and we get to a point where we've got an acceptable solution that everybody's happy with, it would be a delegated decision. That's where we are. So, but if we deferred it and it wasn't agreed and there's still letters of support, it will come back to you because that's what the scheme of delegation requires. But in terms of off-road parking, you could just extend the driveway into the garden and not have a garage and double your parking. The application here is for a fairly sizable garage in the conservation area that, in my opinion, its design is inappropriate. I think there's a design solution we could support, but that requires either us to refuse this tonight and then the applicant makes a fresh application for which he will pay another fee because he's used up his free go, or it's deferred and officers can go back to negotiate and hopefully get to a position, Chairman.
Right. So we're in questions. Councillor Mrs. Shields.
After the first application, were they advised that they should turn the flat roof into a pitch roof? All they've done is a sort of false pitch roof, haven't they, at the front?
As far as I can tell, Mrs. Shields, there's been following the refusal, I don't think there was any negotiation or contact or discussion about the revised design.
Oh,
okay,
right.
So it's come in as it is. Yeah. And because it's fundamentally still not acceptable to officers, we've not sought to negotiate a solution. But it appears to me that there could be a design solution, but it's not this design. So the way that officers would go about this is either refuse this and start again, or go back to try and get this application how we would want it. I don't know whether we can get to that point because we've not had that discussion, but if members defer it tonight with that in mind, then the applicant's sitting there listening to it. That's really my suggestion, really, I suppose, but it's open to members.
Thank you.
Councillor Mrs Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. If the Chief Planning Officer is confident that we can find a solution to this problem that will suit both parties, then I'm very happy to move deferral. What I wouldn't be happy with is the current design with a flat, almost raised patio area with overlooking issues. I certainly can't support it in its current form. So I'm perfectly happy, if the Chief Planning Officer believes there is a solution to this problem, to move that deferral.
Thank you. Joyous ward member, would you like to speak?
Yeah, I did have something written out which has been totally blown out of the water now because of what's happened now. I did actually, because it's on my patch, went to have a look. And to be honest, I don't think the photographs do the site justice. It is very raised, is the lawned area and the garden itself. And you've got to go up steps to get to the entire garden. It's not just you wouldn't be going up steps to get onto the patio on a roof of a garage. And I think the initial application was always for a flat roof to retain the amenity space within Willowgate, but to have the garage and storage space and extra parking. And the wall, because I think originally it was a wall, was more from the officer's point of view as a safety aspect, so that they didn't fall off the garage onto the where the car is parked. But they didn't like the wall, so it was then put in as a false pitched roof. But looking at the rest of the street scene, and especially there is garages on there. You know, I think it's a matter of taste for the SP16, the SP20. It isn't offensive when you look at the site. I think it will be very done to a very high standard. But as the committee member, I mean, have sort of already said about deferring it and probably open negotiations with the applicant to try and find a solution.
Does anybody else wish to speak? I have got a mover and a second for deferral, so I will put that to the vote. Unanimous that the application has been deferred for officers to go back and negotiate a more suitable design. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item 12, application Rydale Car, Westgate Car Road, Pickering.
Thank you, Chairman. Just a quick update on this one. We received a late letter of support for the applicant from the occupier of property that's now called the Gatehouse. And the Gatehouse is located, if members are looking at page 147 of the agenda papers, you can see the red line and the blue line there. It's all very faint there. But it's the Gatehouse is located at the entrance to Westgate Car Lane, and it's where the old railway line crosses over. It's now called the Gatehouse, as opposed to whatever it was called on the old plan. Which I can't now read. Westgate Car, I think it's what it was called. But the letter's only a paragraph long, Chair, and so I'll just quickly read it out. To whom it may concern, I've been a resident at this address since 1979. My property is adjacent to that of Mr. Barber. Over the years, I've seen several small holdings appear nearby of variable quality and merit. It's clear to me that Mr. Barber's land is being managed to high standards, be it hedging, fencing, buildings, and importantly, animal welfare. Mr. Barber is a considerate neighbour and an asset to the community. In view of the demand for his produce, this is agricultural land in an agricultural area being used for basic agricultural purposes. Therefore, I can see no reason why this application should not be approved. And just very quickly, if I can just show you some photographs. This first one is actually stood in front of the building, which is being used for the housing of livestock, which is why it requires planning permission, because it's within 400 metres of a protected building. It's important to understand that, as the report tries to state, that because a building that houses livestock is within 400 metres of a protected building doesn't mean it can't be granted planning permission. It just means that it needs planning permission. So that's where we are. As you can see, it's a relatively small building, open-fronted, and the cattle that you see in there in the foreground are rare breed cattle. I'm not sure of the breeds. I'm sure the applicant might be in a position to tell us. I'm sure some of them were Herefords. I can't remember what the other ones were called, but quite small. And this next photograph is actually taken at the end of the access track from Westgate Car Lane. So in the background, and I apologise for the size of the photo, the grey building is that, in fact, the building behind the building, the subject of this application. This pale buff-coloured building is the end gable of the building you're just showing you. So in landscape terms, it's almost dwarfed by the existing building. The existing building is located to the west side of the building that's the subject of the current application, and in between it and the residence of the objector who's registered to speak this evening. I think the objection has made reference to intensive farming. To my mind, as far as I can establish, this building is used for the overwintering of cattle and is not, in my view, intensive farming, and it's clearly of a very small scale. You'll see from the committee report that your council's EHOs have no objection to the proposal, but they are, however, recommending a condition relating to waste management, a waste management plan. But from what I could see, the animals are kept on a straw-based system. But it's not too far from Costerbeck, so obviously that's a consideration for us. I've got nothing else to add to the report, Chairman. I think we might have two speakers on this particular item.
Thank you. First, we've got a speaker objecting to the application, David Goodfellow. Thank you.
All right. Low-Coster Mill is a substantial property consisting of a family home and a holiday complex. We welcome 3,500 individual visitors to the region every year at Low-Coster Mill. The planning department has stated the building is approximately 55 metres away from the nearest residential property, which is used as a holiday let. This statement is not true. The nearest building is our family home. The planning department state Costerbeck runs between the proposed building and the residential property. This statement is not true. Our garden is on both sides of Costerbeck. The planning department also state, apart from this property, there are no other buildings in close proximity which would be described as protected. This statement is not true. There are four residential buildings within the 400 metre limit set by the Environment Agency. The EHO have referred to a visit to Costa Guest House. I do not know the whereabouts of this establishment, but it is not Low-Coster Mill, the family home, or Low-Coster Mill Cottages, the holiday complex. And whilst the barn may be, as stated, 55 metres from our conservatory window, over half the distance in between is made up of our garden and guest areas where tourists used to sit and relax on our bridge over the Costerbeck. This means only 27 metres away there is a barn full of cattle that require mechanical feeding by diesel tractor. Machinery and noisy animals has already impacted on the use of our garden and on the enjoyment of tourists to Rydell. Costerbeck is a main river. I note no response from the Environment Agency. There is no mention of SP8 tourism in the planning officer's appraisal. SP8, in its opening paragraph, states support for the business plans and operational requirements of existing tourist and visit attractions, and also scenic landscapes, sense of tranquility that visitors come to enjoy and experience. No longer can visitors to Rydell enjoy this at low cost a mill. SP20 states the cumulative impact of new development on the character of an area will also be considered. When we moved to Locosta Mill 4 years ago, the field was grassland, with no barns, structures or machinery. Over the last 2 years, the applicant has built a barn under permitted development. I was informed that the council objected to its location at the time, but could not stop it being built on an agricultural notice. The applicant has deposited engineering spoil heaps in breach of planning permission.
30 seconds left.
The applicant has deposited varying bits of farm equipment along the fence line and installed 2 shipping containers 10 metres from the fence. The cumulative impact of assembling a farmyard with barns, machinery and animal barns right outside our window is unacceptable. The planning department and EHO haven't got the basic facts right and have failed to assess relevant planning policies SP8 and SP20 raising the objection. I ask if there is a single member who believes it appropriate to build a barn to house animals with noise, smells, flies, dust and vermin issues 27 metres from their home. The Environment Agency recommended limit is 400 metres.
Thank you.
And I would say, if it was this end of the track, there'd be no objection. It'd be 370 metres away. I'm not surprised gatehouses don't object.
Okay, thank you. And now I have the applicant registered to speak, Francis Barber.
Evening. Having had my letter of application, I would just like to reiterate various points. The shed was built with planning permission by AgNOT. The present application is to temporarily house cattle. It was built in that location after discussion with Rydell, who originally stated that it should be built right opposite the dwelling that is objecting, so that it looked like part of that dwelling and wasn't planted in the middle of nowhere. I negotiated for the present location as a hedge and a tree screen it from the objecting property. I've developed my small holding, taking into account that the holiday lets are there and trying to reduce any impact on the environment visually and physically. My whole thrust of the small holding is that of being native and rare. My cattle and pigs fit into that category. It is in no way intensive, as has been claimed, as this is completely against my raison d'etre. This is a small holding, set up by an army veteran having served for 25 years. It is a small holding using practices that are as chemical free as can be, working in a way that seeks to protect the environment and conserve it. To this end, I have planted a wood that borders my land and the complainants, and I'm working on restoring all the hedges and other woodland which are in a very poor state. The trees and plants I have planted are also native. I have done this whilst producing a high-quality meat product that is fed with low food miles and sold locally, including to a large amount of tourists. My hay and silage is home-produced and does need mechanical means to make and move it, but that does not make it high intensity, and the stock are not mechanically fed. The mentioned heavy machinery is a small, by modern standards, tractor that does all my work, helping me keep everything in house. The cattle are housed for a few months a year for welfare reasons. As a complainant has commented, it is wet land, and therefore I cannot leave the cattle out when the land is so wet, as there would be a detrimental effect both to the land and to the wildlife that use it in the wet season. In summer, the cattle are used locally for conservation grazing. Being housed in winter, there is no dust, little smell if any, and certainly no issue with flies. Animals like to vocalise at mealtimes, especially if they deem you aren't being fast enough. Any noise is buffered by the buildings that are there and by the plantation that I have created. With all this in mind, I ask that you look favourably on this planning application to house cattle in winter for welfare. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, Chairman, we stand by the report that's written, is the first thing, but in terms of the development that I'm looking at and the development that I drove to and photographed yesterday, we're dealing with a low-intensity use building. It looks to me as though it's being used for winter over-storage of cattle, and I think I counted, I can't remember if it was 13 or 15 cattle on the site yesterday. That's it. I really do feel as though, you know, we're making hard work and over-egging what, to my mind, is an appropriate use of agricultural land, which is verging on a small holding. But if any members here are familiar with Westgate Car Lane, once you get past McKechnie's, it peters out to a single track road, and before you get to this site, you've gone past watercress beds and trout farms and all sorts of things, all manner of sort of fairly small scale agricultural activities along that track, and this, to my mind, is another one of those. To my mind, the recommendation is sound. I think the recommendation does draw attention to a waste management plan. But in terms of the Environment Agency consultation, which was raised, I think, by the objector, this is not an application that the Environment Agency wanted us to consult them on. So we need to establish that the Environment Agency are drawing back from direct consultation, and they have a threshold of what they want to see and what they don't. And if it doesn't hit the threshold, they send them back.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the officer? Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
It's just one question, and it's really fairly simple. This is an agricultural holding. It holds an agricultural holding licence or permission or whatever it is that's deposited. It is a registered holding.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any further questions? If there's not, we shall move into debate. And Councillor Joy Andrews, would you like to say this one?
When I just looked at it, I thought it was a straight formal yes. I agree for the first time this evening with the officer's recommendation. Obviously, we've heard the two people speak, and we have to keep an open mind till the end. But we live in the countryside. It's a shame that neighbours can't get on, and obviously I would hope that possibly, you know, they may be able to in the future. But I don't see a problem with this. This application, and I would support the officer recommendation.
Does anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Mrs. Goodrick.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll second that. I'm satisfied that it's a registered small holding. It's in the countryside. It's proper use of that land. And people often go on holidays to farms to enjoy cattle and sheep and various other things, so I have no problem with it.
Does anybody else wish to speak? Councillor Mrs. Shales.
I don't know the site. I'm a bit disturbed at the two sides we've heard, and I feel rather sorry for the first speaker and his home. I quite like to look at it, but I expect that people who know it better will probably vote for it. I might just abstain because I don't really know it. And it does concern me that there is something which is obviously good here, but there's also been somebody else who's been living there, first of all, and whose surrounding land and garden and so on doesn't seem to be in a very happy position.
Thank you. Well, the application has been moved and seconded for approval, so I'll put that to the vote. Thank you. That's 8-4 and one abstention, so the application has been approved. Moving on to agenda item 13, any other business? I have no other business. Agenda item 14 is a list of applications determined under delegated powers. Has any members got any questions on those? No. And agenda item 15 is the appeal at Dakelia at Swinton. Broughton, beg your pardon, which was dismissed. That's the end of the agenda. Thank you all very much for attending this evening.
Can I just ask a question on agenda item 15, Chairman? It's to do with a policy that directs all or new development into the market towns and so on. Well, some of these market towns are overburdened with development, and it's come rather quickly, much more quickly than was expected. Is there any chance that the Rydale plan could be looked at with a view to revising that requirement?
I think, were you in the room earlier? I did mention about a review of the plan after the site's documents gone through. We will be reviewing the plan after 5 years. Well, September, 5 years is up.
Yeah.
So there will be a review of policy and what's working, what's not. And so I would suggest that when we've got the site's document out of the way, that will be the next bit.
I appreciate that your department is under enormous pressure at the moment. I can only ask that you do that as quickly as you can.
Well, I suppose we'll do it as quickly as the planning inspectorate give us a sites document, and then we start on the next plan.
Thank you. Good night.